Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this meeting of Rydale District Council's Planning Committee. We're not expecting a fire alarm tonight, so if it does sound, it is for real. Please leave the building by the rear doors or the door to my right and congregate in the top car park. Ladies and gents, toilets are in the corridor along with water. Please can you ensure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent. We do have a number of speakers tonight. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Lovely. Moving on to the agenda. Agenda item one, apologies for absence.
Apologies have been received from Councillor Windress. Councillor Raper will substitute. Apologies have also been received from Councillor Jan O'Dean and Councillor S. Arnold will substitute.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to welcome Councillor Potter onto the Planning Committee and also Councillor Arnold and Raper for substituting this evening. Agenda item two, declarations of interest. Are there any declarations? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Item nine, the applicant is a relation of a fellow member, your good self. Item 10, Cropton, I have been lobbied. Both items, personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Item 9, because of the personal relationship, and items 11 and 12, because I've been lobbied. They are personal, non-prejudicial and non-pecuniary.
Thank you. Councillor Arnold.
Thank you. Item 9, as I believe it has been mentioned. Item 6 is personal and prejudicial, but I'm going to speak, but then I will sit at the back and not be involved.
Thank you. Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. Item 9 is it's personal and non-prejudicial. Thank you.
Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Chairman. Item 9 and 10 for the same reasons. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Shales.
Items number 11 and 12 are personal and prejudicial, so I will sit in the audience during that, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Paul Andrews.
First of all, Chairman, can I say I will have to leave early because I have another meeting to attend.
Okay, thank you for letting me know.
As far as interests are concerned, I have been lobbied in regard to item 7, and the neighbour is a colleague of ours. Okay. So that's personal, non-prejudicial. I've also been lobbied on item 11 and 12. And that again is personal and not prejudicial. Neither of them are prejudicial.
Thank you. Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. Item number 9, personal and non-prejudicial, it's just that the applicant is a relation of a member of this council. And item 10, I have been received a letter by post. I don't know the applicant or anything about it, but and that's personal and non-prejudicial. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Yes, I've been lobbying on items 7 and 10, both prejudicial or non-pecuniary.
Thank you. I'd like to declare a personal and prejudicial interest in agenda item 9, as the applicant is my husband. I will leave the room for this application. Therefore, at this point, in the absence of the chair and vice chair, a chair for this item will need to be elected. I'd also like to declare a personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary interest in item 10, as I have been lobbied.
We should all declare a personal non-prejudicial interest in item 9.
Yes.
Right. Can that be taken as read?
Yes, thank you. Moving on to agenda item 3, the minutes of the meeting held on the 8th of May. Do you agree that these are a correct record? I will move these minutes from the chair, seconded by Councillor Cleary. I'll put those minutes to the vote. Councillor Shields, have you voted? No, you're okay. Thank you. Those have been approved. Moving on to agenda item 4, we have an urgent item of business this evening, which I believe the report is going to be circulated now, so I'll let you have a couple of minutes to read that. Thank you. Are you all happy if we carry on with the officer presentation on this item? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just run through a series of photos of the site in question. The report that's been circulated relates to an ongoing enforcement investigation. We've got a number of, first of all, this is a plan of the land in question. The actual land owned is a smaller parcel of land, but it is within this red line boundary. That piece of land amounts to about 2.5 hectares of land. This photo shows the mobile unit referred to in the report, taken in February of this year. This photo was provided to us by a local resident who complained about the alleged breach of planning control. This is taken facing roughly northwards across the fields towards the building in question. This one was taken during an officer site visit in March, again showing the unit still in position. This area of land is within the area of outstanding natural beauty. This is a photo from early May. This was provided to us by a member of the public, again showing it in situ within the field. In the background you can see the established farm at Newstead Farm. And these are the more recent photos, again showing the unit in position. Recent developments, as referred to in the report, include the laying of hard standing at the site entrance. As you can see, there's also been activity with a digger on site, and parts of the site has been excavated in preparation for the laying of services to serve the mobile unit. Also shown in this photo is a wooden structure referred to as a dog kennel, which is partially complete. At the point of the serving of the temporary stop notice on Friday, that was it was partly roofed and partly open. So it's been explained to the occupants of the site that any further works would be a breach of that notice. Again, this is from Friday of last week, just showing the progress that had been made with this unauthorised building. So those photos show the situation as it stands. This week, we've also been informed that Yorkshire Water have connected a mains water supply to the site, although that's been undertaken without breaching the notice. It's done without falling in within the definition of development. So as per the recommendation contained within the report, it's put to members for the reasons set out that the council pursues formal enforcement action against the buildings that have been erected on site and the use of those buildings, along with the associated hard standing and ancillary structures.
Thank you, Alan. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Godrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I wasn't aware that this was coming this evening, so forgive me. I should declare that I have been lobbied in this matter as the County Council representative. I'm also a member of the Hawardian Hills AOMB. Thank you. They're all personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Yes, Councillor Potter.
Yeah, I presume it's safe to assume that this development would stand no chance of being granted planning permission given what it looks like and its position in the AOMB.
I think that's... obviously, we can't prejudge any planning application, but clearly there are significant issues here relating to our duties in the AOMB because it's a nationally designated a landscape and we have extra duties in that location through the Countryside and Rights of Way Act. But clearly, in terms of our what I'll call normal planning policies of erecting development which is associated with residential development in a locality outside of a development limited open countryside, then clearly there has to be an essential need proven to live in that location. You'll have noted from the report that we have also received a submission via the planning portal for a planning application, but it doesn't actually cover what we've got before us. And I think at this stage we can only deal with what we've got before us, which in our view is not a justified development in that location. that, you know, we don't know whether anybody will then subsequently seek to try and gain planning permission through a valid application proposal, but we don't have that before us at the moment.
Any further questions? Okay, we shall move into debate. Does anybody want to take this? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I was contacted over the bank holiday with regard to this development, which, as you have quite rightly said, is in the, within the AOMB boundary, well outside the development limits. It's in breach of all the different policies that we have as a council. I don't think it's appropriate development in this location. If we'd had an application come forward, I wonder whether we would support it or not. So I am very happy to support and support the officer's recommendation for enforcement action in this matter.
Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, I echo my colleague's comments and will second the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Roper.
Thank you, Chairman. We have a local plan. It breaches that. MPPF, it breaches that. The AONB, it breaches that, with what's taken place in that photograph alone. It's ramshackle, and we wouldn't like it to be like that, I think. It needs to be a little bit more quality about it if they're going to do a development in this location, and that fails miserably, and I'm definitely going to say vote with the enforcement action to be taken. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? It has been moved and seconded that the for the recommendation, so I'll now put that to the vote. Thank you. That has been approved that an enforcement notice be served. Thank you. We'll move on to agenda item 5, which is the schedule of items to be determined by committee. Agenda item 6 is the application at North Yorkshire Highways Depot, Manorvale, Kirby Moorside. We do have a number of speakers, but I think Alan will outline the application for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There is a late item on the late list on pages 3 and 4, which is a further letter from Kirby Moorside Brass Band. In that letter, they're keen to stress that the band has engaged with Yes Consultancy, the applicants, noise consultants. They explain why they have dismissed the applicant's offer for fixed glazing and ventilation. And they do suggest a restriction if this application is approved for appropriate soundproofing and air conditioning to the band hall. If members are minded to approve the application, it's not something we could condition because it's outside the application site. They conclude in their letter that they remain opposed to the development. I've got some photographs to show members. The application site is located on Manorvale Lane, which is to the north of Kirby Moorside, and the site is located between the two buildings that at the end of the road there, the one with the terracotta roof, and the property number 1, Manorvale Lane, on the left. As you can see, it's located in a former quarry, so it's got some steep sides to both the east and the west. Again, a closer photograph of the site showing its current condition. It was a former North Yorkshire County Council's highway depot, and it's still got the original structures on the site. Some security fencing at the moment around part of it. You can see as well that the outer sides have had the trees removed on the majority of the site that's within the applicant's ownership. They were formerly on top of the bank. Those are the trees that aren't within the applicant's ownership at the southern part of the site. Again, looking down Manorvale Lane in the opposite direction. This is at the north side of the application site, and these are the steps that go through Manorvale Wood to the top of the sides. I think there's the former remains of Neville Castle at the top there. And this is the brass band hall, which is located directly opposite the application site. As you can see, its car park is to the south. It's got its main door, and it's got a range of windows on the side facing the application site. So I can count six windows that open there on that side elevation, and obviously the doors open as well. That has permission for an extension to create a concert hall, which is to go where the scout hut is currently behind that building, and that's been designed with acoustic measures to guard against noise on both the walls and the roof, and triple ventilation. I think there are some speakers, Chairman, so I'll come back if I need to. Thanks.
Thank you. First to speak is Councillor Steve Arnold.
Good evening. I'm the group scout leader at Kirby Moorside Scout Group, so that's why I'm speaking. Baynham Powell initiated the first Scout 2 Scout camps in 1907. From then on, young people and adults took initiative and ideas from these camps, and scout groups began to sprout up all over the country. Kirby Moorside Scout Troop was started in 1908, making it one of the oldest in the country. This planning application makes me very fearful for the future of scouting in Kirby Moorside. I have been involved with scouting for over 40 years. 30 years of those have been in Rydale after I took over running the scout troop when I moved here. I have since carried out many scouting positions and roles in Rydale and North Yorkshire, and now back at Kirby Moorside. The band have been wanting to extend their band room for a long time now, and in the end, the logical place to put it is where the scout hut is, and the scout hut's gone now. After long discussions, we came to an agreement with the scouts that the scouts and cubs and beavers would hold their meetings in the new band room. That means that we will possibly use it three times per week and sometimes at weekends. When the weather is good, the leaders like to get the young people outside for activities, and they regularly use the woodlands in Manorvale, which will all involve walking up and down Manorvale. There are many instances where scout groups and local residents work well together because these are established relationships, and many of the local children will have attended the group. However, there are also frequent instances where new people move in close by, and it's not long before the scout group is forced to close down or move. Here, we don't have one new family, but we have six new families moving in, and I'm not sure how this is going to work out. Unfortunately, I'm substituting tonight, so due to where I live, I only got the agenda about 5 o'clock. So, looking through it, I couldn't find any mention in the report about noise from the scouts and cubs and beavers. I mentioned it previously about the three times a week and going up and down the road for activities, etc. But has there been any thought given to the number of cars bringing and taking home children from scout and cubs meetings? Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have an objector, John Barrett.
Thank you, Chairman. I wish to object on three reasons for why this application should be refused. Firstly, flooding. Second, amenity, and third, band noise. On flooding, 8 serious flash flooding incidents have been highlighted by both Mrs. Banks and Mr. Bancroft. However, the applicant's submissions have identified only 2 flooding incidents and so have failed to adequately assess the flooding risks. I doubt the validity of the advice offered with this planning application on the basis of these inaccurate facts. Similarly, the planning officer has observed that water, at times of heavy rainfall, flows through the application site and pools to the south. his statement, like the applicant's expert advice, fails to understand the flooding history here. I have personally witnessed standing water where it is proposed to build these houses. Such houses will therefore displace flood water, increase the water flow, and add to the flash flooding incidents and risks that council taxpayers have to endure. The recent Yorkshire Water drainage work to the south of the current site and Manorvale Lane will do nothing to protect those residents. I don't understand why the applicant's submissions in the sequential tests have been accepted when we are all well aware of the plans for a massive housing expansion on the Westfield site. Kirby Moor site clearly has alternative sites with a much lower flood risk, and this committee now needs to step up to the plate for those Manorvale residents and protect them from the increased flooding risk that this development would pose. On amenity, this is a dark, damp location that is surrounded by the rock face of a former quarry on one side and the band room on the other. Because of band noise, most of the living quarters are to be pushed away from natural light, close to and facing the quarry cliff face. That cliff face will need regular specialist coppicing and clearance to prevent the outlook deteriorating further as weeds and trees regrow. This is far from acceptable. It is also acknowledged that noise disturbance is an issue, and the planning officer in his report has reproduced the concerns of the environment specialist about noise levels in the fourth bedrooms and outside of the houses proposed. The planning officer seems to have formed an impression that the band have been uncooperative, and I wonder if this was an influencing factor when he reluctantly concluded that these plans only, and I quote, appear to demonstrate an acceptable solution. Well, whatever. The band put right any misunderstandings in its letter last week, and notice noise is an issue, and the band deserves this committee's protection according to the requirements of policies SP11 and SP20 of the Rydale Plan. I ask that councillors be as brave tonight as the planning officer has been cautious. These are houses in a dreadful location that the town really doesn't need. The three major concerns, which are clear to us all, give ample justification for refusing the application, a sensible decision that I'm sure the council could more than capably successfully defend on appeal. Thank you.
Thank you. We now have the agent to speak, Janet O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members, we've been liaising with experts to find a new use for an abandoned site which overcomes previous objections and satisfied officers of the council. Parish Council are in favour of this development to tidy up the site, providing the flooding issues can be resolved. Terrace of six houses, gardens front and rear, a shared amenity space, no ecology or landscape objections, the tree removals were agreed by officer of the council, the affordable housing contribution for off-site provision. In terms of flood risk, North Yorkshire County Council officers have confirmed that due to the submitted design, the houses will not be at risk of flooding nor increase the risk of flooding down the road to other properties. This is based on our expert flood risk engineer's report and the County Council's expert officer. Residential amenity. We've commissioned the City of York Council's noise consultancy to assess noise impacts on the proposed houses when the band is practicing, with windows open and when closed. As stated, the main rooms are at the rear of the houses, the lounge, the dining room and the bedrooms. At the front you have the kitchen, the cloakroom, bathroom and a spare room. City of York Council officers specified particular glazing for these houses to allow BS 8233 and the World Health Organization guidelines to be met when the band's windows are open in hot weather. But this won't be the majority of the year. When the band hall windows are closed, it's well within those standards. The York Council officer stated, as a result, I do not think it would be necessary for any mitigation to be provided in terms of sound insulation of the band building, but it may be worth considering provision of mechanical ventilation for the band hall such that windows could remain closed and thus reduce noise breakout. This is a conclusion of an expert authority in this situation. So the ban suggestion of soundproofing is not required, nor would the ban practice time to be affected by construction noise, so that doesn't need a restriction. Officers accept that the benefits of the redevelopment of this brownfield site, the provision of a terrace of houses in
30 seconds left.
No increased flood risk, satisfactory noise assessment, and they've recommended approval. This removes an eyesore from the site and provides a small terrace of housing. And just to say, in terms of the Scout group, it's no different from church bells ringing or any other rural activities such as tractors going past. So I can't see people objecting to a Scout trip.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To come back in the chronological order that the points were raised, regarding the scouting operations, we're well aware of the scout hut being there and for it to go into the newly extended building, and we don't see any problem with the coexistence between the group and the residential development. I think the assessment that we've done in terms of the band hall, in terms of movements to and from the site, from cars dropping and picking up, would probably be arguably a worst case scenario than the scout hall movements. So we're content that the two uses could coexist. Moving on to the second speaker. The point regarding flood risk, I think, might be better for me to explain by referring members to the agenda. If I can ask members to have a look at page 36 of the main agenda. This is an email from the applicant's flood risk engineer, and I'll read a passage of the email to you. It starts from the second paragraph. You will note that the road falls at a steady gradient past the proposed site to a low point of 66.93 opposite Little Orchard, where the historic flooding has occurred. It then rises up to the junction with Dale End at a level of 67.42, where the level starts falling away again down Dale End into Kirby Moorside. This means that if gullies at the dip in the road opposite Little Orchard get blocked, water can build up outside Little Orchard to a maximum level of 67.42, or a depth of 490 mm, before it starts to flow away again across Dale End to the south. This is why the residents in Little Orchard sometimes require rescue, and accounts for the photos that you have seen of the dinghy on the previous agenda. It also explains why the EA maps show surface water flooding spreading sideways at the bottom of Manorvale Lane. However, the nearest point of our site is 40 metres up Manorvale Lane, at the lowest level around 67.85, which is 470 mm above the maximum level the water can reach in Manorvale Lane. The EA maps reflect this by showing the flooding limited to the road surface of Manorvale Lane opposite our site and not spreading sideways. Furthermore, our proposal is to set the floor levels of our houses 450 mm above Manorvale Lane levels, 300 mm above surrounding ground, with the lowest finished floor level being 68.35. This means the lowest house finished floor level will be 930 mm above the maximum water level reached in Manorvale Lane before it starts to flow south. Therefore, the houses can never flood due to blockage in the gullies at Little Orchard. And if I can refer members to page 38, there is a cross section, section B. You have to zoom in into this. And it shows the level annotated, and it shows you the finished floor level of 68.35, and then the highest level before the water would flow south at 67.42. And it's not disputed that water runs through the roadway within the site. That's never been disputed, but it's demonstrating that if there is the event of a surface water flood, the water would not flow back into the site, it would flow away. As a result, if I can refer you to page 42, this is the final view of the lead local flood authority, and that confirms that I'll read it to you. Based on the information provided and collated through our own research, believe that the applicant has demonstrated that the proposed site will deliver adequate flood resilience to people and property. This is not to say the site is risk-free, and we've never said that, but the degree of measures analysis provided substantially mitigates the risk. In relation to a means of escape, should flood levels restrict the access to Manorvale Lane, it's been demonstrated that an exit route for flood event has been established or mitigated with property resilience. It then goes on to say that based on the submissions by the applicant with reference to the topography of the site, the lead local flood authority find that surface water runoff is unlikely to increase the risk of flooding off the site. So as a result, we've come to the conclusion that the exception test, making the site as safe as possible, has been met. Regarding the comment about the sequential test, the guidance in the National Planning Policy guidance is that you take a pragmatic approach to the development that's proposed, which in this case is a very urban form of development, 6 terrace properties. And when we've done the search of possible, available and suitable sites for these in Kirbymore side, we haven't found anything that's available that could accommodate this. As a result, the sequential test was met, and that is detailed in the report. The criticism of officers about engaging with the band hall and whether the band hall engaged with Yes Consultancy, we accept that the band hall engaged with Yes Consultancy. It's in the report. No dispute at all regarding that. Regarding the living conditions for occupiers, having the majority of the or all the habitable rooms on the rear elevation, we recognise it's not an ideal situation. In fact, the development isn't an ideal form of development, but we've got to the point where it's quite balanced, finely balanced, and we think that it is on balance acceptable. We're not saying it's great. There is some shared amenity for the 6 occupiers to the north of the site, as well as the rear amenity space. And there is a condition for a management plan for the landscaping on the outer sides of the quarry. I think that's the best solution that we can achieve on this site. As you'll see, it's not a site that should really stay in this condition. It needs something and doing some appropriate form of development. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? No. Okay, we shall move straight into debate. We don't have the ward member here. Would anybody like to take this one at all? Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. I've been a member of this planning committee for 20-some years now. And in the history that you've got on the agenda tonight, I've been a member of the committee for each one of those particular applications. Every one of them was refused, several went to appeal, and all the appeals were lost by the applicant. I was somewhat surprised when I saw the recommendation for tonight, until I more thoroughly read the papers and realised, yes, it's a balanced decision. That balance is here for us to tip, our choice. The format for the dwellings I consider to be detrimental to any person living in there, living at the back and looking at a bank and having no real view. There won't be very much light coming into those windows because of the orientation either. You've got a very dark bank there against the back of that building that we see there, and it won't change any when you come further this way where the dwellings are going to be. It's going to be very dismal, in my opinion. Not going to be aesthetically very pleasant. I'm not searching for reason to say no. I've already got the reason to say no. The impact is negative in all areas. The site itself wants something doing to it that's appropriate. I agree with that particular comment. Something that is appropriate. This is not the appropriate application for this site. And I recommend that it be refused. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I've got sympathy with our officers because they're obviously treading a very thin line here. They say it's finely balanced, and I've read this report. I have to pull on my own personal experience of noise nuisance and the problems that that causes. I have friends who live next door to York Minster, and when the bell ringers are practicing, the nuisance it causes to them. So I don't think we can be in any way flippant about whether the noise is going to disturb the residents, because I think the very answer to that will be, even if it is within the permitted noise levels, it will cause a nuisance. That's the personal opinion. I look at condition number 30 with regard to speed bumps and rumble strips. Now, I've got friends who live outside a speed bump, and the vibration through the house causes them great concern. It's disturbing. It happens at all hours of the day and night, and they're not happy with those either. So for me, it is finely balanced, but I can't support it on this at all. Not at all. Sorry.
Thank you. Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. I echo the feelings of my colleagues. And as for, someone said that people that live next door to church bells. We frequently hear of people asking for church bells to be silenced during the night, and that's just one thing. Another thing is, I remember being on this committee, and a planning application went in to tidy up a brown site. And it was refused because the neighbouring site was an industrial one, and they objected, saying that they didn't want people living there who were going to complain to the noise that they were making, and so that was refused. Another thing is Kirby Moorside Brass Band. I'm a supporter of the arts, music, art, drama, theatre, everything, and I think that the Kirby Moorside Brass Band is an asset to that community, and we should be not just trying to provide housing in a place where people aren't going to be really enjoying living there, but we should be protecting the rights of this band to keep playing there undisturbed and without people complaining about them. So I can't support this at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Like my neighbour, I have a lot of sympathy for the officer, and I thank you for the very balanced report, level report that is presented. Can I read part of the report which should be highlighted? With respect to your comment about means of escape, should Manavelle Lane become blocked by surface water, we advise that which would be managed by waiting for the storm to abate and escaping up the steps above the houses and across the footpath at the end of Castlegate, which is unaffected by flooding. I end the quote there. This isn't something we should be planning for. It's just something we should not even start with. I think, again, I appreciate, as Councillor Goodrick has said, this is a balanced report and a balanced judgment. But we're building down to a standard here. We're building down to items. I will support the motion to refuse approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Andrews.
Chairman, I know the site well, and I've heard Kirby Moorside Brass Band, and I know exactly where the brass band, where the band hut is, and it has a cliff behind it, which will no doubt act as a sounding board and make any noise from that building very much worse. And I'm really sad to hear the developer saying that it should be up to the band to make changes to their buildings in order to accommodate their development, which I think is totally wrong, and I would support refusal.
Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Thank you, Chair.
Well, I have to agree with virtually everything that's been said so far, particularly that it's a very balanced, or finely balanced, decision. Now, I live about 100 yards from Pickering Scout Hut, and there is quite a lot of noise. There's an awful lot of traffic comes and goes. It doesn't bother me in particular, because I'm pretty laid back. But if there are six people living in six houses, I can almost guarantee that some of those people will be complaining about those very issues, particularly up a very narrow lane that doesn't look terribly well kept on there, which is rather ironic considering it used to be highways. I find it very disappointing indeed, that the developer doesn't seem to have managed to come to some sort of sensible accommodation with either the band or the scouts, because it's quite clear to me that there will be quite a lot of noise at various times of the year, particularly in a deep, narrow valley, which will hold the sound. So that is bound to create conflict, and I just find it very disappointing that there doesn't seem to have been any real agreement come to, and it doesn't seem to be particularly on the part of the band. There are a number of drawbacks that I've identified. Obviously, they're in the report. The noise, which is a valid planning constraint. The flood risk, which I'm reasonably satisfied with. I first looked at this site in person probably 10 years ago, and I've looked at it since because of the flooding issues. I'm reasonably satisfied that those flood issues have been addressed quite capably due to the raising of the floor level. It is only surface water that's the problem, which runs down that valley. It's something that should be addressed further up the valley by slowing the flow. You'll be surprised to hear. And there are methods where that could be done, an attenuation by that. It's going to be a dark, gloomy site. There will be problems with the steep bankings and the control of vegetation. Obviously, that would be the choice of anybody buying a house, but those are some quite significant drawbacks. The only real positive I can find is that it's a good use of a redundant brownfield site, which is already adjacent to housing and dwellings, so it's not really appropriate to put another industrial site there. To use the brownfield site, it would be better to have dwellings there, but there are, as I've already said, quite severe drawbacks to that. So, yes, I'm still struggling to find which side of I'm going to come down on, but I see some significant drawbacks. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Two things. The bands, I think, are always important. They've been in Rydale in North Yorkshire for years and years and years. And it's something we all should support. I mean, they're wonderful whatever town they come from and wherever they go to. And I'm right behind them. With regard to the scouts, I wondered whether I would have declared an interest. I was a girl guide at one time. We had similar sorts of vows, I think, as the scouts take. I wouldn't go back and think of too many of those. But, again, people have worked very hard for young people, for scouts in particular, in the area. And I think, really, you know, they should be given quite a lot of consideration. And really, on these two things, which are quite a lively part of life generally, anyhow, in Kirby Moorside and the rest of Rydale and probably further afield, then I'm going to come down the side of everyone else who has so far felt they can't support the application. Thank you.
Thank you. We have had a mover and seconder for the recommendation of refusal. If I could point members in the direction of page 12 on their agenda, where there are the three reasons for refusal that were put forward on the March 2018 application, committee report. I think it's fair to say reason three would have to be omitted, but are we happy to move refusal on grounds one and two? I will therefore put that to the vote. Thank you. We've got a recommendation for refusal. So if you're for refusal, press the plus. If you're that has unanimously been refused. Thank you. We'll move on to agenda item 7, which is application land adjacent to Auburn Cottages, Langton Road, Norton. Alan?
Thank you, Chairman. This application was deferred from the previous planning committee meeting, so outstanding issues relating to highway safety matters and green brick samples. And the final views of the countryside specialist. On the late list, there is an updated report that addresses the issues that weren't addressed in the main report. I can also confirm that the countryside specialist has confirmed there's no objections to the hedge, so the application is recommended for approval, subject to the two conditions in the recommendation part of the report. Also on the late list is a letter from a Mrs. Fiona Campion of White House Stables on pages 8 to 10. On pages 11 to 12 is the confirmation from the Highway Authority that they have no objection to the development. On page 13 is an additional plan that shows parkland railings to the front of plot 6 adjacent to Langton Road, and the arrangement onto Basley's Lane, apologies. And on page 14 is a third-party response from a Mr. Mark Campion. And with that response, there were 55 images submitted of mainly HGVs using the lane. Attached onto page 15 is a sample of one of these photographs. For those members who weren't at the previous meeting, I'll just run through the photographs. This is taken on Langton Road, looking south, and the application site is behind that hedge, taken earlier in the year. And this is at the southern side, looking back towards Norton. I've included this photograph because it shows the type of properties in the local area and the materials and what we're trying to, what's around really. This is the access to a property that forms the northern boundary. This is the existing field access, which is roughly where the new access is going to be into the development. And some photographs of within the field. This is looking south. It's looking north across the site. Some from the western side looking up. Some members will appreciate there is a bit of a levels change there. It's looking south east. South east. In the opposite direction. That's Millbeck. That's the current access route for agricultural traffic. again in the southern corner. That's one of the properties that backs onto it at the southern edge. This is taken from the lane that runs to the south of Norton. I have another photograph taken recently with the trees in leaf. And this was what was debated quite a bit last time at committee. It was the access for pedestrians and cyclists onto Basley's Lane. As you can see, at the opposite side of the lane, there is a public footpath, and there are some informal and permissive rights of way across the land to the south. And when the inspector allowed the appeal, he wanted a link onto this lane to allow people to access it. So the access will come along the boundary within the field, the hawthorn hedge there that's in flower, and then it'll have a crossing point onto the footpath on this side of the road. And as a result, to create the visibility, about 30 metres of this hedge will be replanted about 2.5 metres back from the lane, so there will be a general improvement to the visibility along that lane by that. And then one final photograph showing the site as it is pretty much today with the landscaping in leaf. I think there is a speaker, Chairman.
Yes, we do have a speaker, Fiona Campion. The middle button, yeah. I'm afraid you'll only get the 3 minutes, please. Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to comment further on the issues about Basley's Lane and the effects this development will have on it. And I'm... would also just like to point out that Basley's Lane is actually a bridleway, and it has a bridleway number 2470141, and I'm afraid your officer hasn't even mentioned that, which is disappointing, but not very surprising. I'm sure you will all, I hope you've all had the opportunity to read the letter that I sent, which has quite a bit of background about Basley's Lane. I live at the other end of it in Whitewall, and it has a long history as the access to the racehorse training gallops from the racing yards on the east side of Norton using the two sets of gallops, which hopefully you're all familiar with as well. It's a substantial part of Norton's infrastructure and economy. And the status as a bridleway of Basley's Lane is often fudged by authorities, not least of all highways, I'm afraid, which is something we've had a lot of problems with over a long time. But it is their responsibility to ensure the status is maintained and that it's safe for horses to use. And it's regretful that this doesn't always happen. And I have read Mr. Hunter's report, and contrary to what he actually says, the planning inspector did not examine the impact on the horse racing industry and the movement of horses during the planning inquiry, because it was not one of the original reasons given for refusal by the council when it first considered it, although it was the second time round. I don't know if you remember, but it was considered twice, and there were some... But that was too late for him to take note of them, and he gave it a cursory glance, but he dismissed it because he was not required to consider it, and he commented that no traffic information had been available for him to consider. However, since then, WSP carried out a survey in 2017 which confirmed that 705 vehicles used this bridleway daily, of which 15% were HGVs, despite there being a weight limit, a 7.5-ton weight limit, and the average speed was 27 miles an hour, which is dangerously high. As you can see, it's not clear from that photograph, but it's actually an S-bend, and it's blind. And even if you take the hedge out, you still can't see around the bends of the S. And in both directions, and it hasn't. The weight limit has helped, but not eradicated the problem. And my husband, now with his horses, he has to ride out with a rider cam.
30 seconds left.
And he's taken. I'm sorry. There are, and some of those photographs have been made available, but because of the size, it's not been possible to circulate. But since the planning inquiry 2 years ago, there have been a number of major developments which have further affected Badgley Lane and which have not been mitigated against. First, the change of priorities of Wellham Road, Church Street, Castlegate has meant that there's been a lot of traffic displacement. People using Badgley Lane as a shortcut so that they can get to Wellham Road and get the priority into the new traffic arrangements. Secondly, because the Langton Road has a lot of new traffic slowing measures installed, such as speed humps and priority bollards. Thirdly, the new primary school annex, which opened in September. And fourthly, Network Rail have announced that they'll be doubling the train services in Malton in 2019. And finally, the 90 new houses that have been built on Langton Road. And all these issues are going to make a very, very major impact on Badgley Lane. And I haven't finished, which is regrettable because...
Please, can you stop now? I've asked three times. Thank you. And is there anything you'd like to come back on?
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Just so members are clear, what we're dealing with is a reserve matters application. The outline was refused by this committee and it went to appeal and the appeal was lost. That we can't revisit any of those issues that have already been determined on the outline. What we're looking at is the siting, the external appearance, the layout, the landscaping, and the individual accesses on this site. That's all we can consider. I would like to read a paragraph from the appeal statement. Paragraph 75 states, and this is the inspector's assessment, local horse breeders and trainers have concerns, supported with evidence, of the dangers which modern traffic poses to their livelihoods and to the safety of their horses. But it is clear that the developments proposed would generate effects on the local highway network variously described as minimal, minor or marginal. Even if the developments were not allowed to proceed, background growth in traffic in the local area would result in the same effects within a few years, so the solution to horse trainers' problems would not be found by denying permission for these appeal proposals. So the inspector did address this issue. Whether people agree with that or not, he did look into this. And when he allowed the appeal, there was a requirement for a sum of £2,000 towards improved signage advising motorists of horse riders in the area. And that's in the legal agreement for the local area, so people will be aware that there are this is a bridle way and there are people using this as well. Thank you.
Just as an add-on to that, I mean, I think the Speaker has raised an issue in terms of the traffic using Basley's Lane and the amount of HGV, which I think was quoted as 15% of the figure that was there. I mean, I think the thing that jumped out to me there was, well, if there is a weight limit on Basley's Lane that is not being adhered to, then there's an enforcement issue for probably the police, I would suggest, at the end of the day, but certainly for us to draw that issue to county and the police's attention. But we can't reinvent history here. I mean, this is a reserve matters application and the principle has been established. I think since the last committee, the only thing that Alan has brought along that he hasn't showed you, which was there was some concern about materials. So we've got some of the bricks behind us that I think members wanted something that was a bit more Norton than not Norton, as it were. So I think we'd sort of haven't mentioned that in the presentation.
Yeah, apologies, I forgot that. These are...
normally get down to this level.
There you go. After the discussion at the last meeting, these are the two brick samples that we think are acceptable for the site. This is the better of the two, which we would like to see used on the majority of the frontage plots, and this would be used more in the inner plots, but a combination of the two with a clay pantile roof.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Raper.
Thank you. I'm obviously not familiar with the procedures, previous proceedings. The site itself, on one of the photographs, showed a landform that looked extremely wet and not very well drained. Is there a problem with drainage on this site?
That was the line of Pride Pot Beck, I think.
Yeah. No, before that there was a field, showed you a field that looked really, really rough and tuffety, and it looked like it wasn't very well drained at all. So is there a site, is it boggy? How is the drainage to that location poor?
Well,
that there is a surface water scheme that's submitted that attenuates water on site and then it will discharge into Millbeck at a restricted rate. That's been sent to the lead local flood authority and they're content that it can work, and there is a condition on the outline permission that will deal with that.
Just in case of we get weather like we're not expecting occasionally, where you have extra large downpours, have you got a retention scheme in this site so that you can keep that runoff rate at what it's supposed to be?
Yeah, it's the requirement that all surface water systems take account of climate change, and there's an allowance in there. I think it's at least 30% for an event that's beyond. Yeah, and then it discharges at a restricted rate.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want some clarification from officers, because the access onto Basley's Lane is just foot and cycle access. There is no vehicular access on there whatsoever, is there? That's fine. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. The number of units, I count 89. Is this the same number that was in the outline planning application which was allowed by the inspector?
The application is for 79, which is the same as the outline. I think the outline was actually up to 85, but there's 79.
Councillor Shales.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, I'm glad in a way that we did postpone this, even just because of the reserved matters, because I think it may have thrown a bit more light on the whole situation. Not just the question, for example, of the material, so that is important, obviously, with so many buildings going up. Concern shown by the speaker is terribly true on Basley's Lane. It is very difficult. If you're coming down or even if you're going up it, whichever end you approach it, it really is difficult. It's just as well that there is going to be a sort of separate way so that pedestrians get there. Now, vehicles do go up and down there, there's no doubt about it. I mean, not legally, but this can happen. And quite a number can use that way now, as has been suggested, because of the general turnaround of the road layout out at the bridge. And people are simply seeking other ways of coming down and getting out around the town, and they're using even something like a bridle path, which is quite far removed from it, which is great, which is a great shame. On the other hand, I'm glad that we've had a bit more of a look at this, and that the highways, you know, have considered the possibilities and so on. And I don't think, unfortunately, we can do anything more. I wasn't here when you actually had the original application for Auburn Cottages. It's just another of those very many applications for development down the Langton Road, which have caused and will cause a great deal more worries for people, for the council, for everybody, when they're all actually in place. We're just stuck with it because there are people in London, I think, who feel that if you can see a green space, well, why don't you fill it with houses? You know, it doesn't worry them in London. So I will have to go along with the recommendation, as I think has been already suggested, Chairman.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you. I think we're still on questions, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
I mean, I'm familiar with Basley's Lane. Obviously, being a cyclist, it's something that I've popped along on a few occasions, and I'm well aware of the dangers. Bearing that in mind, I'm looking here at highway safety matters, suggested changes and so on. And what I want to know is if there is going to be a footpath stroke cycle path access onto Basley's Lane, is that going to be conditioned? Is it going to be properly designed to be a safe access onto what is clearly not a very safe thoroughfare?
In answer to the question, yes, it was approved the outline with the red line went up to Basley's Lane, and there's a requirement for a pedestrian cyclist access point onto there. And there's a plan on the late list. I'll just find the right page. Page 13. And it's, I have to zoom in, but it's the top left hand plan. And it shows you the track. And there's a chicane to stop cyclists pedalling straight onto the lane. And yeah, it will be conditioned. Is that okay?
Yeah, can't really see it particularly well on the plan, but as long as it's conditioned.
No, it's not vehicular access.
It's not vehicular, it's just for cyclists.
Yeah.
And there's a cyclist link onto Langton Road as well from the development, so there's two links.
Any further questions? No, then we shall move into debate. Elizabeth, would you just like to carry forward what you've just previously said?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. I think it's
thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. It's a disappointment, this, really, because this committee, when it came to us, said no. And a planning inspector decided that we were wrong. And I'm never comfortable with one person making the decision over 10 others that have looked at it and live in the area and recognise the limitations that we have. I am concerned that continuing development in Norton affects our substantial racing industry, but the decision's already been made. We can't change it. The inspector said we have to have it. Now, I'm satisfied if, and that was why I asked for clarity about the cyclists, it just being a pedestrian and cycle route. I'm not satisfied if there's a 7.5-ton weight limit, that the bigger vehicles that shouldn't be using it are using it. It's a matter for, believe it or not, trading standards, who now enforce weight limits on our county roads. So I think that needs to go up to county, and we need to have an active push at stopping larger vehicles going on that road. None of it's really palatable. I don't like any of it, but we are where we are, and we'll have to go with it. Can I just ask, though, there is no recommendation on this, Chairman. It just says to follow.
It is actually on the late pages, which is recommended for approval, page 6. Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I think the officers have done about as much as they possibly can, but I don't like it. I don't like this at all. I know the roads through Norton pretty well. I can see the way that both Malton and Norton are being swamped with traffic as a result of overdevelopment. I feel this is part of that overdevelopment. There's a weight limit which we're told is being flagrantly disregarded, but is going to be enforced. We all know that it's not going to be enforced. We all know that County Council hasn't got the resources to enforce it. They won't enforce anything else. They won't enforce anything against the quarry, so they're not going to enforce this, are they? So that is very unfortunate. I'm very disappointed in the way County Highways have dealt with this, because they seem to approve practically everything, and they don't seem to want to put themselves in a position where they have to justify themselves for the refusal to public inquiry. Perhaps that would cost them money, I don't know. Whatever the requirement that we have to give this approval, I'm afraid I'm going to register a protest vote and vote against it.
Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Well, it looks to me like the decision here is, can we rubber stamp a fait accompli? So there's not really too much to decide. Now, I've had cause to despair about Highways' responses in the past, and I can't see much different about this one. Quite clearly, there are great concerns about Basley's Lane. There has been for years. The amount of traffic on it, the type of traffic, the speed of the traffic, the access and so on. Now, unfortunately, that is not really a planning issue to go with this that we're talking about. And I very much agree with Councillor Goodrick that it's something that this council really needs to address, but it's got to be via North Yorkshire. So, yeah, something needs to be done about this lane, and urgently. I still have concerns about pedestrians and cyclists trying to get out onto a lane of that, how much traffic there is and the speed it's going. I think it's appalling that a perfectly good hedge should be taken down, even if it's going to be replanted, just to facilitate that. But yeah, horses, the narrowness, the blind bends, the speeding traffic, the rat running. There is video evidence of the said, but unfortunately it doesn't seem to have come forward at the right time, and the inspector made that decision against, quite clearly, local opinion and this committee's opinion on a couple of occasions. So, yes, it's just unfortunate that it's just all about rubber stamping something. Thank you.
Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. Can't disagree with anything from what the previous speakers have said. I'm not disappointed with the county highways. I'm alarmed that county highways would go and actually approve 79 houses down this lane that's totally inadequate to service that number of dwellings in the first instance. I'm going to propose, Chairman, if I may, and be a little bold on this, that a condition is applied to the lane that every 50 yards it has to have a pull-in point for traffic to use, unless, of course, that's already been addressed and is part of the permission that the inspector's already dealt with, which I would consider to be totally irresponsible and inadequate. But other than that, if I get thrown back on that, and I see that the office is keen to get back at me on this one, very keen, if that's the case, then I'm going to join Councillor Andrews and vote against it.
Chairman, we're dealing with a reserve matters application. You can't introduce things that are more onerous than were dealt with or required by the planning inspector in being the decision maker that he was at the time. I think we're all hugely disappointed with the decision, but nevertheless that's the decision we've got, and we are just simply not in a position to require things more onerous than the planning permission is. This is not the planning permission. The planning permission is already in the bag. These are the details that were reserved to be approved following the grant of that planning permission. And it's undoubtedly some of the traffic from this development will filter out in different directions. But the main vehicular access into this site is off Langton Road. The requirement here was for a pedestrian link onto Basley's Lane. That was dealt with, and that's what we have. We can't go back on that now. And should we want to, we would be as guilty for being unreasonable for that request as we would be for trying to refuse the principal again now on a reserve matters application.
Well, thank you for the explanation. We missed the bus, excuse the pun. I'm disappointed that's the case, and I think we all are. But I'm still going to register my disappointment by voting against it. Thank you.
Thank you. It has been moved by Councillor Shields, and I will second it from the Chair. The recommendation of approval is on the late pages, and so I will now put that to the vote. Thank you. That has been approved. Sorry, just bear with me a moment. We'll move on to agenda item 8, which is application at Ellis Patents High Street, Rillington. Right, I think order's been resumed. We'll don't press anything, Councillor Clary. Right, agenda item 8, Gavin.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Right, I'll just make sure I've turned my phone off now. Thank you, Chairman. This particular application is primarily on committee because it's a major application. Having said that, we did receive some comments during the processing of the application, which did express some concerns about the proposed extension to this existing well-established business in Rillington. For those of you not familiar with Rillington, I'm sure Councillor Maud will be very familiar with where this particular existing employer is. But for those of you that aren't, on page 61, there is a location plan which, although it is at fairly small scale, shows the location of the premises, which is to the south of Woodlands Road and Woodland Grove. To orient yourself, if you're at Rillington and you're coming from Moulton direction and you come to the traffic lights and turn right, you go all the way down that lane, and this premises is actually quite a significant premises at the end of that lane, and it has expanded in recent times. So in page 62, or on page 62 of the agenda papers, you can see that this site has an access off the high street, and with the main bulk of the buildings in that sort of north-west corner of the site, I guess. And page 63 and 64, going on to page 66, show where the proposed additional buildings that are proposed with this application would sit. So as you can see there, there is what I'll describe as a covered open area, but then an additional warehousing facility on that rear of the building. Page 66 is quite useful because it also shows at that part of the site that the properties in Woodlands Grove are sort of a little bit nearer than Woodlands Road to the application site in total. And whilst on that drawing they look quite as though they might be quite close actually on the site, when I show you the photographs you'll see they're actually quite a considerable distance away. And I think that was one of the issues when in the past this council planning committee actually, I think, refused an oil container which went to appeal and we lost. I'll show you a photograph of that in a minute. They're actually relocating that as a result of this scheme, which I think was part of the community involvement event that they had. In addition, they're also proposing on that boundary, which currently has quite an extensive landscaping belt, at that precise point proposing to actually relocate some of the landscaping because it in itself is quite close to the backs of the houses. So the whole thing's been slightly dog-legged over, which is shown on the submitted drawings. I think it probably at this point would be useful just to show you some photographs, Chairman. This is the existing premises. You can see quite a modern-looking premises. These are the buildings in the sort of northwest corner of the site. And this is looking from across the car park. So the extension bit would go here. So it's another of the same in effect. This is looking at the the fuel store, that was the bit that was refused, and that's the, these are the properties in Woodland Grove. So Woodlands Road, you can see a set further back, they've got longer back gardens, but there's like a little cul-de-sac crescent shape here. This planting here, which is actually quite deep, which we'll show you in a moment, they're proposing to move partially away from that boundary and increase the planting into the site. So it still screens the building, but would be less apparent to the residents. I think the planting was done by the people who owned the company some time ago, and obviously over that period of time it has grown up. So again, the development would be in this area here. This is looking across the front of the site, so looking, so the views I was showing you the other way were from the entrance in, and this is a view looking back the other way from the car parking area, so the entrance, the front of the building would be roughly in this area here. This is a view from the back of the churchyard. And this is that fuel store looking back from the north, looking back to the side of the site. So you can see the backs of the, there's actually quite a gap here between the backs of the building, and this planting strip actually does come quite close to the backs of these properties, so they're proposing to replant some, keep this last line, so it's not lost. And you can see, get a feel for how deep this planting is. So it's quite actually, now that's in leaf, I wish we'd got a more up-to-date photograph, but now that's in leaf, it's actually quite shadowing in its own right. And although none of that actually needed planning permission, it does have a shadowing effect on the back gardens of those properties. So that was something which came out of the neighbour consultation process, that the developer themselves did before they submitted the application, was actually getting that resolved. So this all stays, but then the back of the building would carry on in this area here. And that's just a view back out of the site. So nothing really to add to the report, Chairman. I'd hope it sort of it was a bit more of the same in the sense of what's been proposed on the site. It is proposed that this building that's behind the back of the property, the new properties in Woodland Grove, will only be used for warehousing, not manufacturing, which was a requirement that the Environmental Health Officer had suggested. So there's internal reconfiguration on the site. And the reason that the application, as you'll see from the number, is a 17 reference, is that just at the northeastern periphery of the site, there is an ancient monument. And so there was some further archaeological work that was required to be done to give it a clean bill of health. So that was done, and archaeology are happy with the application.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I note that the proposal includes the installation of 408 photovoltaic panels, which I find as a massive plus. The only problem I have with it is I presume that if they decided to go ahead with building this, they would not be obliged to put those PV panels on if they decided otherwise.
It's an interesting point you raise, actually, there, Councillor Potter. I mean, in the sense that they've applied for it, so there's no reason for us not to grant the permission for it. If somebody then built the buildings and didn't put the photovoltaics on, I suppose we could be in that position of deciding whether we wish to serve them with a completion notice to require them to complete the development. We've taken that on face value as it being part and parcel of the application. And I suppose looking at it, the details of the elevations do show the voltaics, don't they? Yeah, so, I mean, they're part and parcel of the approved plans. So I suppose you could argue if somebody reneged on the deal, we'd have to consider whether it would be expedient to pursue it through an enforcement process. One would hope we wouldn't get to that stage. I mean, it puts me in mind of Kingspan at Sherburn, who went to great lengths to put photovoltaics on the roof, and it was about five megabytes worth of photovoltaics on the roof there, because it was in their interest not to be, you know, generating their own electricity in that effect. So I'd imagine there are good business reasons why they'd want to do that.
Yeah, thank you. Could I just come back on that? I mean, I see this as a massive plus to approving this application, and I hope everybody else would as well. And I'd be most disappointed if it was only seen, I very much doubt it, but if it was only seen as a, oh yes, that'll improve our chances. So would this not be the ideal time to condition that even though they've said it's part of it, because that is something that they want to do, so they could have no objection to a condition being popped on there, so that it's something that they've got to do.
They're explicitly applying for it, and they're showing on the plan, so if they didn't do it, then we would be in a position of deciding whether or not we required them to comply with their approved plan. I wouldn't necessarily want to nail conditions onto things which aren't actually necessary if we've got another route for actually delivering it.
Any further questions? Councillor Maud, as a ward member, would you like to take this one?
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, Alice Patents, it's been there for many years now. It started, the property itself, it was a HGV depot when I was a kid, and a long while ago. But some of the complaints we've had about it are the number of HGVs that go up High Street delivering to this site. But listening to the amount of traffic that goes along Baysley's Lane, I don't think there's anywhere near the problem that occurs there. And it's never been a popular site with the occupants of Woodlands Road, Woodlands Grove. As it's extended on, people have said to me, I used to be able to just sit in that garden and look at the worlds. Now I'm looking at a shed. But I've had the same thing from people who live down, I can't remember the name of the street, in Norton, off Ambleton Drive. They said, I like to sit there and look at the worlds above Scagglethorpe. Now I'm looking at somebody else's house. A view is there to enjoy it while it's there. So that's... So apart from that, it's I see no reason to refuse this. I'm happy to support the recommendation that it is approved. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I've looked at this and I can't find a lot wrong with it. I know there are one or two people who will object, but I don't think we can overlook the fact that this is a significant economic driver in the district. They provide a great deal of work. I am delighted, like Councillor Potter, to see 408 photovoltaic units going on the roof, which hopefully will make them more self-sufficient with their electricity and not drawing off the national grid. So for me, I'm happy to second it and hope everybody else will support too.
Councillor Clary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Councillor Goodrick has read my mind and said every word I was going to. I shall say no more.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, pretty much in agreement. Ellis Patents appear, by all accounts, to be a very successful business, which is excellent news. It's exactly what we need. They seem to be a good neighbour because they've consulted with their neighbours. They've gone for the for a nice buffer strip there of trees. It's supported by the parish council. It's a plus point that it's warehousing, so it's not creating the noise issue. Quite simply, we've got to have employment. It's an existing site. It's got existing traffic, which isn't presumably going to alter too much. So I can't really see any negatives to this, providing they stick the photovoltaics on the roof, as they say. Thank you.
Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, we've seen this applicant come before us before on many an occasion. He usually plays ball. And this time they pressed all the buttons, and they've actually got the sequence right in pressing those buttons. Can't fault it in any way, shape or form. Just a pat on the back for them. They're one of the employers around here that takes people from school leavers and trains them up. And good luck for that. So they'll get my vote.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded for approval, so I will put that to the vote. That has been unanimously approved. Thank you. I will now leave you in Gary's careful hands.
Yes, thank you, Councillor Potter. It may be you. The Vice Chairman of Planning Committee is actually at work this evening, so we don't have a Vice Chairman. So I would like, in the Chair's absence, to invite nominations for a Chairman for this item. Well, I'll take the first one first. I've had a nomination for Councillor Cleary, seconded by, and Councillor Goodrick. Councillor Goodrick's thirded it before we you got to. There is also another nomination. Would you like me to put the Councillor Cleary nomination to the vote first, and we'll see how that goes? Yeah. Okay. So if there are votes for Councillor Cleary to just chair this item, that would be helpful, please. That's four, if you're happy with Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, members. Agenda item 9, 18-00202, Full, Southern Parish Council, full application, erection of an agricultural poultry rearing building with feed bins and area of hard standing following the demolition of existing agricultural buildings at Beechtree House, Southholm, Slingsby, Moulton.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 9 has been reported to committee as a major application. There are no objections from members of the public or any consultees. It's classed as a major application by virtue of the footprint of the building exceeding 1,000 square metres. I'll run through a series of photos of the application site. The first photo shows the existing access that leads up to the established poultry farm. The existing operation is an intensive operation. There's approximately 120,000 chickens on site, and there's an associated 780 HGV movements per year with the existing operation. So the existing access, you can see that there is suitable visibility splays set back for the movement of HGVs. This photo is taken on the access road that leads east-west towards the site. You can make out the existing range of building, agricultural buildings in the background, and the existing evergreen planting which is to the east of those buildings. In the foreground you'll also notice the flood water which is from the overland surface water flows. This photo was actually taken in early March following a period of heavy rainfall, so you can see that the surface water is held back. That's approximately 100 metres from where the building would be constructed. This photo is taken within the farmyard itself, just facing towards Beechtree Cottage. There's a public right of way which leads into the site and just follows the access track before leading westward away from the application site itself. This photo shows the existing buildings which are due to be demolished to make way for the new poultry unit. A range of single-storey redundant agricultural buildings, and this photo is facing towards the rear of those buildings. This photo is facing eastward, just showing the existing planting. The conifer planting in the background would be removed to allow for the construction of the new building. This is facing away from the application site, back towards the access road, and again it's just showing the surface water adjacent to the access. The footprint of the building is not within the area of highest flood risk. It falls within flood zone 1, although parts of the access road are within flood zones 2 and 3. And this photo shows the range of existing poultry units. There's 4 in total, which do accommodate 120,000 chickens. This would increase to 175,000 as a result of the application. So moving to the report itself, there's no updates to the report as published. In terms of the planning constraints, as mentioned, the footprint of the building is outside of the areas of high flood risk. The lead local flood authority did request a flood risk assessment for this application. That was provided by the applicant, and that dealt with their concerns. In response, the local lead flood authority has requested conditions in relation to the surface water drainage details. The proposed building is of considerable size. It would measure up to 6.4 metres to the ridge and would have a footprint of 2,600 square metres. There would be an increase in HGV movements associated with the development, which would increase to 1,104 movements per year, which equates to approximately one additional movement per day. The Highways Department have confirmed that this could be accommodated without any highway safety issues. In terms of the appearance of the proposed unit, the external materials and colour finishes would be in keeping with the existing units at the site, and replacement planting would be secured by condition. That would screen views available from the east, although they are at a distance of in excess of 500 metres. With regard to impact on amenity, the report notes that there is an existing Environment Agency permit which controls the operation of the business. It's proposed that the existing management and operational practices are carried forward to apply to the new building. It's considered that the proposal would be an acceptable use of land that would not give rise to pollution or disturbance to adjoining neighbours. In conclusion, it's considered that the development would support the land-based rural economy and contribute to the UK food production in a sustainable manner. There are no objections from any consultees or members of the public. It's considered that the proposed development would not have an unacceptable impact on the open countryside, local amenity, flood risk or highway safety, and the application is therefore recommended for approval.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Paul Andrews.
I'm wondering, Chairman, if as there are no objections, no planning issues, we could just go straight to the vote, because as far as I understand from the officers, the only reason this is being brought to us is because the building is of a certain size.
Do you wish to propose accepting the recommendation?
I will, Chairman. Yes.
Other members, are there any other members wish to speak, particularly starting with a seconder?
Questions, Chairman?
We haven't finished questions yet.
Right, okay. Well, I have a question, please. Aren't these chickens, thousands and thousands of them, going to be kept simply inside, or are they going to have any possibility of free range out on green grass?
The proposed building would be a continuation of the existing operation, which is intensive poultry farming, and they would be housed within the building.
Well, I have a second only. Question then. I thought that the rearing of chickens in this way, like this, ended in about 2010. Has it just been ignored, or has everybody just gone on and do it, and it didn't end then? Is that right?
No, Mrs. Shields. I mean, the whilst there has been a certain drift to free range and various things, this form of what we might describe as intensive farming is still permissible. It's a lot more regulated, but it still does exist.
Well, I think it's disgraceful, and I can tell you now I won't second it.
We're still in questions. Are there any other questions? Councillor Raper.
Thank you. We're in the butchering industry for many years, so I think I can adequately...
Is this a question to the officer?
It's an explanation to Councillor Shields. They will be running loose within the building, on the ground floor, on the floor. They won't be kept in cages, and I think it's the keeping of cages that you are referring to that was stopped in 2010. So they will be able to run free and loose and do what they like to do within the confines of the inside of the building, and they're kept in a safe environment that is considered adequate by all the experts in the field.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I would really like to know, following on what Councillor Raper said, exactly how much freedom these poor creatures are going to have in whatever length of life, you know, they're going to have.
Mr. Housen will have a...
Planning is not here to deal with matters of animal welfare. There are other regulatory powers, there are stocking densities, there are all sorts of things that exist, but we're not here to replicate that. So you have to judge this on its planning merits, which doesn't really cover whether these chickens are kept inside the building or outside the building. So I accept your moral issue, but morality is not an issue for a decision of a planning application.
If there are no more questions, we'll go into debate. The local ward member is obviously not here. Would anybody like to take this on as Councillor Goodrick?
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to take it on because it's part of my county division. I have every sympathy with Councillor Shields' point of view. You know, we always want to give the best welfare we can for our birds. But nevertheless, this is we're back to significant economic development within the district. And it is no different to what is going on there now. It is just an increase in the size of production. And, you know, if you feel that strongly, don't eat chicken. But, you know, the rest of us do eat chicken, so I am happy to move it for approval.
Councillor Roper.
Just very quickly, Chairman. The people that oversee this operation are fully behind what they're proposing to do. They have raised no objection. They would have done at the design stage if this building wasn't adequate for the use proposed. So I'm quite comfortable and happy for it to go forward.
No more comments. I'll put it straight to... It has been moved and seconded for approval. Put it straight to the vote. It has been approved, 8-1. Councillor Goodrick, if you'd like to go and fetch Councillor Farnell.
Lovely. We shall move on to agenda item 10, which is application at Morelands High Street, Cropton. We do have some speakers, but I'll get Alan to outline the application first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 10 relates to the erection of a detached outbuilding to the rear of Morelands. It also involves the demolition of the existing Dutch barn and chicken hut. I'll just quickly run through a series of photos of the site. This is facing southward from the village green. On the left-hand side of the photo is the property known as Molens, which is a barn conversion. And in the background, you might just be able to make out the Dutch barn. This is facing back towards the south-facing elevation of the converted barn, showing the outside patio area. And this is facing south down the boundary of the site, where you can see the dilapidated Dutch barn and also a former chicken shed in the background. And this is a close-up facing in the same direction. You'll be able to make out the boundary treatment in this area consists of a dry stone wall, which then becomes a post and wire fence. This is facing back north towards the main dwelling. The actual plot itself is a very narrow site, triangular in shape. The barn buildings previously formed part of a wider site, which included White Cottage and has previously been apportioned off. This is again facing northward, and you can see the neighbouring property of White Cottage on the left-hand side of that photo. This photo just illustrates the boundary treatment on the eastern side of the Moorlands property. The site is a historical limestone quarry, so the boundary, you can see that there is a sloping face, and in this next photo you can also see exposed quarry faces. This photo is facing from the outside areas of White Cottage, facing southeastward towards the proposed development site. And again, this is within the White Cottage premises. You can see the boundary treatment. You can also make out the second stone wall, which stands adjacent to the pond, which I'm just highlighting there. That's referred to in the report in terms of the issues with protected species. This is facing eastward, just showing the... this is where the rear of the proposed building would be, the back of the outbuilding. And then finally, this photo just highlights the approximate footprint of the new building in relation to the neighbouring property and the pond. The actual position of the new building, it would be stepped away from the existing boundary to allow maintenance of the back of that building and also for the planting of a boundary hedgerow. So I understand the speaker, so I'll stop there.
Thank you. First, we have to speak is the objector, Mr. Ellerington. Just the button in the middle, actually. Lovely.
Okay, great. So I think you've got all the pictures there, that's good. So... some brief history. At the beginning of 2018, our neighbour submitted plans to build a large garden shed on the boundary of our home. So, the dimensions of this proposed shed was slightly larger than a double-decker bus. So we strongly objected to this. Why would you want a double-decker bus permanently parked on the boundary of your home? A revised plan was later submitted, which we believe addresses some of our concerns, and with some additional conditions we feel we could accept this new plan. There's been a lot of stress during that process, as you can imagine, sleepless nights, writing documents, research, but I think some progress has been made. I still don't understand why somebody wants to build a shed 30 feet long, maybe a bowling alley, but each to their own. So, to the conditions. It's not stated anywhere in any documents, I believe, distance from the boundary. So, the distance from the boundary we would like at a minimum of 1.5 metres. This is to allow the planting of a hedgerow.
1.5.
and allow our neighbour to perform maintenance of his hedge and of his outbuilding. And I think if you look at a reference from the government website, which references the RHS, they're recommending positioning the hedgeway set back at least 90 centimetres to allow for maintenance of that. That's condition one. Condition two, duration of the build not to exceed 2 weeks. During our time there, 4 years, Mr. Winterbottom has worked tirelessly at restoring a dilapidated outbuilding into a beautiful three-bedroom house. But as you can imagine at times, you know, there's been a lot of noise to that. He's now completed that, and we don't want to be faced with another couple of years of work going on building and outbuilding. So we'd like to confine that to 2 weeks, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
30 seconds left.
Point three, damage to existing mature trees. We have a number of mature trees planted just off the boundary, and we're concerned that construction excavation for the pad could damage those trees. So we would like a professional tree specialist to be involved in that process to avoid damage to those trees. Finally, if you're in any doubt, please come and do a site visit to see for yourselves the unique Shuett shared quarry we live in.
Okay, thank you. Now we have the applicant, David Winterbottom. One in the middle, lovely.
Thank you, Chairman. I haven't really got a great deal to add to what's already been said in the planner's report. I think the only comment I would make on what's just been said is that moving it 1.5 metres from the boundary is going to put it right in the middle of the garden. As has been noted, the garden tapers right down as it goes down. By the back end of the shed, it would actually be a very narrow space left. My intention of putting it on that side of the garden is to give myself a view from the kitchen and to actually improve the privacy between the two gardens. My kitchen, as I think you saw from the pictures, is over to the east side of the garden and looks straight down that side. And I would like to clear the rock face and have that as a feature of the garden. I'm disappointed it's come to this sort of disagreement. I have tried to make amendments. I originally planned to just rebuild modify the Dutch barn and get rid of the chicken hut. I dropped that idea. I came up with the next design, which did include solar panels on the back, which was partly why it was a larger area. I agree that probably didn't look very good. What I propose now, I think, will enhance the appearance of the area. It will set me a lot better than the existing Dutch barn and asbestos chicken hut that is there now. I think that's all I really want to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, just to respond to a couple of the comments in relation to the proposed conditions and amendments to existing conditions. In terms of the standoff from the boundary, the plans that would be approved if permission is granted... would allow for a maintenance strip to the rear of the new building, and under condition four, we would require submission of details for the type and position of the landscape planting in the form of a boundary hedge. So it wouldn't be far off a metre standoff from the existing boundary in any event. If members are minded to, it might be possible to amend condition four to include a standoff if they consider it appropriate, but the authority does have the powers to look at those details under the submission for that particular condition. In terms of the duration of the build, planning control wouldn't extend to setting a timescale for the construction, and the impacts of the construction is not generally a material planning consideration, as any disturbance would fall under the Environmental Protection Act. If members are minded to, there are controls that could be set in terms of the hours of construction, if deemed appropriate, but to set a timescale would be unreasonable of a fortnight. And then also in terms of the trees on the adjoining property, the application isn't accompanied by a tree survey. There's no predicted tree losses, and the under condition four, the reference to the maintenance of the tree on the of the planting would only relate to the application site. So any effect of the new building on the neighbouring property is more likely to be a civil matter beyond the planning control in this instance. So I believe that might have addressed the main points, I think.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes. I understood that there was the minimum distance between a boundary to a building. Is that not correct? Have I not understood that terribly well?
Not as such under the planning legislation. I mean, sometimes there can be matters under the building regulations about combustible materials and things of that issue, but only where building regulations is required. But from a planning point of view, we often in this committee deal with things which are built hard on the boundary, you know, because of constraints or particular requirements of schemes. I mean, that photograph, I was just looking at that while Alan was speaking, and in terms of securing some planting on that boundary, there would have to be a gap. I'm not sure as to have checked to achieve an effective screen, it would need to be a metre and a half. But... you know, that clearly is something we've still reserved by way of detail and the condition to achieve. From an amenity point of view, it would be difficult to be that specific, I think.
Can you want to come back,
Councillor? If I can just come back. Yeah. The report's very good and it lists, you know, heights and all that kind of thing, but we don't have any distance from boundary. So I think we've got to kind of put something in there. The other issue that was raised was to do with... environmental protection and limiting the hours of work, and you know we're at the height of summer. I think it's not unreasonable to say Monday to Friday and no work on a Saturday and Sunday, so that people can enjoy the residential amenity of the garden. It's just a suggestion for a condition.
It's a question of balance, I suppose, Chairman. I mean, I think that there is the considerate constructor scheme, which is more often attuned to a conventional developer building houses next door to somebody, but I suppose the issue is the same. But it's more of a voluntary thing rather than a condition. I think given the way that our environmental health officers often think, you know, in terms of noisy type activities close to residential property, they'll specify normal weekday hours and maybe Saturday morning, but not Saturday afternoons, not Sundays. Because people work, you know, and obviously if they're at work, then we're potentially getting to a situation where the person couldn't actually realistically build the building if they were doing it themselves. I suspect that might be the case, but we don't know. But we're sort of really nibbling away at the edges of planning control, really, in terms of planning is a fairly blunt tool. And ordinarily, we wouldn't get down to the levels of saying, well, ye shall build a building in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, however many weeks it is. Your planning permission actually lasts 5 years. Or however many years we give it, and more often than not, when somebody starts building something, they want to crack on and get it done. But if somebody's doing it themselves, and you know they've got a full-time job, then it may take more than 2 weeks to build a building. So I think that we couldn't really go with as a reasonable condition. We've been looking at the drawings while the debate was going on, and because of the scale of the build, the drawings, the thickness of a line is half a metre. And so armed with that, you know, I think, you know, you're probably somewhere between getting on to about a metre with that red line there. I'm reluctant to rely on the 1 to 500 scale plan because of, you know, when you get down to that level, what a metre and a half actually looks like. But you can see the intent. The intent is to provide a planted boundary on the side of that building. to further screen the building. I think that's the intention.
Councillor Shields.
This probably may sound a very simple question. Most of you are going to know the answer, but I don't. What's the difference between a Dutch bar and an English one? What is the importance of taking a Dutch bar? Are they going to get rid of it? I don't know. Can somebody just tell me, please?
Councillor Cleary, can you?
An English barn is not, I don't think, specified per se. A Dutch barn per se is not actually that. The Dutch barn, stricto dictu, the roof rises and falls on the posts to allow for the content of fodder there within. What we call Dutch barns is simply an open-sided shed by design. An English barn is a barn in England, so far as I know.
Councillor Arnold.
Thank you. It says in the information that during demolition, work with special care should be taken in case bats are present. Now, would it not be more appropriate to do a bat survey in the first place? Because if you disturb a bat, you've broken the law to start with.
It's based on a risk assessment of the building. I think the countryside management officer, who, believe me, you know, if he thinks there's an issue with bats, we'd know about it. He's basically looked at this building and said that the risk of bats is not great. But nevertheless, one can never rule out any potential issue. So that's why it's an informative rather than a condition, or in a more extreme situation, requiring survey before we make decisions.
Are there any further questions for the officer? If not, we will move into debate. We haven't got the local ward member. Would anybody like to take it, Councillor Potter?
Well, I wasn't particularly intending to take it as the ward member, so if anybody wants to do that, they can, but otherwise I'll crack on.
You crack on.
Okay. Yeah, funnily enough, my initial scribblings before I heard this was, what's the distance from the boundary? Is it suitable for the maintenance of both the building and the hedge? And should that be conditioned? Having heard the presentations, I find it rather sad that the neighbours couldn't agree, because I should imagine it's inevitably going to create future conflict, but that's unfortunately nothing that we can do. But having looked at the picture there, in my experience of hedges, you're talking about a good metre width. Presumably the neighbour on one side would have to maintain that side of the hedge, but would the planting be right along the boundary or set back to make sure that the hedge was within the applicant's land, in which case you're taking around a metre, then you have to have enough space to get down and cut the hedge and maintain the back of the building. So surprise, surprise, I've got around about 1.5 metres, which is what the neighbour requested in the first place. And I don't find it unreasonable that there should be a condition that actually allows for both the hedge and the maintenance of building and hedge. That sounds perfectly reasonable within the planning arrangements. Again, I'm afraid I must agree that once you've got the planning permission, it's up to you to build it. It doesn't seem unreasonable that if professionals are doing it, they do it at reasonable times of the day and not in the evening. But if the applicant was to do it himself, then that would alter things entirely. So, to be honest, I can't find any objection to this. I find it sad that the neighbours can't agree in the first place, but I certainly do think that there could be some condition as to the setback of the building to take into account the necessary maintenance. Thank you.
I know I understand the logic for that. I think the worry that I have is in the context of the very precise distance that was specified by the neighbour, is that that is actually what it ends up being as a matter of course before we've actually assessed what the boundary treatment planting is, and then our countryside management officer saying, well, that's what's needed. I mean, you might turn around and say, well, actually, what I think I really need there is a double staggered hedgerow of mixed native species, and then having taken that forward in 4 years' time, we need, you know, we haven't got that. So I think which I think Alan was trying to say, is that we've got the requirement for the boundary treatment, which itself will dictate what comes from there. But I'm a bit uncomfortable looking through what the tests of conditions need to be in terms of necessity and enforceability and reasonable in other respects, and there's six tests in total, whether or not to just say it shall be 1.5 metres would be reasonable. I think that what we need here is to still have that boundary treatment condition, which by default will fall out of that, something will fall out of that, which will be an acceptable scheme that we think is good enough to discharge the condition, which will follow on. So I think that's where we are with it. It's clear it's not going to be hard on the boundary. You know, it can't be. But I wouldn't like to say I'd want it in the middle of the plot for the very reason that the applicant has suggested, that we don't want to get to a silly situation of where the building might be. I think what we're looking here is just something to soften and screen the building from the neighbours. It's a very natural feeling of garden, isn't it? You know, it's a quarry that's been overtaken by nature, and you know, in some respects, there's quite a lot of benefits here, that we're getting rid of some fairly ugly buildings and the like. But nevertheless, the building that's coming back has got a footprint to it, but it's a lot lower profile than we started with, which I think was accepted by the neighbour as a reasonable compromise, subject to these sort of other matters being dealt with. But I don't think we can be quite as prescriptive as the neighbour would like us to be.
Councillor Andrews.
Chair, can I propose that we approve this with the recommended conditions, plus two additional conditions, one requiring the distance from the boundary of the building to be 1.5, be a minimum of 1.5 metres, and the other to require that the work shall take place within the hours of 9 till 5 only.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. In principle, I've got no objections. I think what we've got is a fairly underused, probably very old building, which could be replaced by something which will be substantially better in the long run. There are issues. I do have concerns. I have concerns about the boundary distance and the amenity for the neighbour. So those are my concerns. However, having listened to our Chief Planning Officer, I think I'm going to suggest that we delegate that decision to him about how far away it should be from the boundary, in consultation with our tree specialist and our Chairman of Planning, so that they have to get this one right, not us. And I do think it's not unreasonable to protect some of the residential amenity for the neighbour during the summer months. So, you know, I've got no objection to people working at the weekends, but, you know, there's often an issue when you want some quiet enjoyment, if you've been working all week and you want to be in your garden on a Saturday or a Sunday, that we do protect that residential amenity. So how you do it, I'm going to delegate that one to the Head of Planning and let him sort it out.
Is there anybody else wishing to speak? Okay. Councillor Andrews moved a recommendation with regards to distance and hours of work, and then Councillor Goodrick very kindly delegated to the Chair of Planning and Head of Planning in consultation with myself. I will.
Can I just try and get Mrs. Goodrick, Councillor Mrs. Goodrick, to agree with me and change my proposal slightly?
If I could have finished my sentence? Also, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
So it has been recommended that it be delegated to the Chief Planning Officer in consultation with the Chair of Planning to, with regards to the boundary treatment and other conditions and work hours of work. And I would like to second that recommendation, please. Councillor Andrews.
Well, in that case, Chairman, I would like to amend that recommendation by agreeing with everything you've said, except with regard to the hours of work, where I think it should be restricted to 9 to 5 in weekdays, perhaps an appropriate shorter period during the weekends.
Thank you.
If somebody would second that, I don't know.
My mind was thinking something along the lines of Monday to Friday 9 to 5, Saturday 9 to 1, no Sundays and no bank holidays. Was kind of working along with the Chief Planning Officer. Okay, right. So it has been moved and seconded for delegated approval. Can I now please put that to the vote? Thank you. Has been approved.
I mean, Chairman, I mean, the effect of that decision is to delegate approval of the application to me in consultation with the Chairman of the Planning Committee. So we've heard what everybody said. There's a discussion to be had, and we'll do what we can. Okay.
Right. Moving on to agenda item 11. The planning application for north wing of Firby Hall, Village Streets, Firby. We do have a speaker, but I'll get Gary to outline the application first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. As you'll note, items 11 and 12 are essentially the same scheme. One is the householder scheme, and item 12 is the listed building consent proposal, but it's for the same submission. And what I thought would be helpful is to firstly show you some photographs of the site, and I'm just going to go to the end first because they sort of set the context for where Firby is. And Firby is a relatively small, I'll call it a hamlet, but a group of buildings to the north of Westow. So if you're heading out of Westow and heading towards the Malton direction, you go past before or after the kennels now, but as you're heading along that road, there's another little lane back towards Kirkham. And if you travel along that lane, then there's another little no-through road which heads to the hamlet of Firby. So you have to sort of go in the same way as you sort of come out the same way as you go in. Rural area, hedgerows along all of the approach road. And as you approach from the Westow direction, this is the main view of the main entrance to Firby Hall, and this is the hall in the background. So you're some distance from the hall at that direction. And actually the property that we're dealing with, which is at the far end of the hall, which is subdivided, is actually, you can't see it from this direction, but it's behind that tree there. So if you carry on past that entrance and go to what I guess was the tradesman's entrance all the years ago, Mrs. Shields is nodding, you're some 200 yards or so further down the road. This is the tradesman's entrance into the back of Firby Hall. And actually, you can see the building, but it's very well screened by trees and planting at that point. But this driveway comes in and sweeps round and up to the hall. And before you get to the hall, this driveway then approaches this part of the building, which is the subject of the planning application and the listed building consent application as well. At this point, you're immediately confronted by a part of the building which is at odds with the rest of the building. I think it was added sometime in the late 60s or certainly pre-Rydale. It's not us. we didn't approve it. But it's a rendered section with a hip roof, a very different sort of feel to it than the rest of the building. And as you get closer, you can see that this is the part of the building that is essentially part of the rest of the hall that you were looking back at on the first photo, stone, very imposing building, but then this one is sort of slightly at odds with the building. So it is listed, it's physically attached to the building, but clearly not a historical part of the building. What you have in the foreground here is, and you'll note it from the committee report, this is sort of like a start of a wall that was being built that had been applied for retrospectively, that was refused planning permission and listed building consent, which was referred to in the committee report. And that was partly, well, mainly because it was springing off the main part of the building. This application actually seeks to retain a wall roughly along this line, but coming in at this point where it's hitting the new part of the building. So that's the fundamental difference between the two applications. So I'll just go back to the start of the more close-up photo. So this is as you're entering into this driveway, which has got the boundary is somewhere here, but it's not specified on the ground, so it's just like an open area, so the ownership is separate. And the side of the property and the driveway goes to the rear, which I'll show you some photographs at the moment, which has been altered to the rear in the relatively recent past. But you can really appreciate the difference in the parts of the building from this point. This is panning round to the side, so you can see the more recent additions here in this gateway is further to the rear. And this is looking back the other way. So at this point, you really, again, that was the tree that was hiding the view of this part of the building from the main entrance. So you've got a very grand hall here, a wing, and then a much later addition there. And these are just other views of this group of buildings. So they were back to this structure. So that's what we're dealing with, Chairman. I mean, as amended, the Conservation Officer feels that the scheme which is proposing the construction of the wall springing from the building at the point of the newer part of the building, which is shown on page 119, which is a low wall and gates, is acceptable. That's both, well, it's for this application we're dealing with at the moment, but also the listed building consent. The Parish Council had objected to both applications, but primarily on the grounds of highway safety, which clearly you'll have seen is not supported by the Highway Authority. It's, as I've mentioned, it's on a no-through road. I went there today and was travelling extremely slowly by the time I went to the entrance, and I think issues with regard to deliveries and where the vehicles go are capable of being dealt with within the site, but if they're not, well, it's a matter of, you know, property law as much as anything else. I don't think there's a highway safety issue, but obviously we have a speaker, Chairman.
We have an objector to speak, Elizabeth Shields.
Madam Chairman and members, this application is no way compatible with the Grade II listed building from the 18th century. The visual impact of the proposals before you would seriously affect the aesthetic appearance of the entire building at the hall. First of all, there has never been any wall of any kind in front of the house, and there are no traces ever of such a feature. Like many another Yorkshire hall, like Kirkham or Manythorpe quite close, there's been an open space in front of the driveway which sweeps around the house and an open grass area beyond. Today, the drive faces onto a very well-kept garden and a parterre. The present proposals, however, include two walls, one projecting forward at right angles to the north wing and joined to another which is set laterally across the main drive. In this parallel wall, the applicant wants not one gate, but two separate gates, one for people to go in and a second, a double gate, for vehicles. Now, such features like this are found commonly and appropriately in a city or in a town. However, Ferby is not a city. It's not a town. It is not even a village. It is a hamlet of 10 dwellings with 12 owners or tenants in it. It comes to a dead end. You can't get lost. The application is an attempt to impose a totally urban entrance to their property, regardless of the visual effect on the house as a whole. The previous owner at North Wing had a small fence attached to the end of the rendered section, not in the middle, right at the end, as you can see there, to which she fastened a 5-bar gate. Her gate matched a similar one, which is at the bottom of the drive entrance onto the road, that would have been seen on the side when we had saw the picture a moment ago. The width today of the open entrance there in front of you is 5 metres, and permits plenty of space to create an adequate entrance to that part of the property. I urge you, all of you, please to come and have a look and see exactly what it looks like in front of the hall. It is actually going to ruin the sort of oneness of the whole building, which has never had anything put in front of it. Please come and see the horrendous application it would be if approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, not really, Chairman. I think the only thing I wanted to do was just to highlight, which Councillor Mrs Shields had just referred to towards the end of her speech there, on page 119 is probably the best one to look at it, which shows the line of the wall, which is a, Councillor Mrs Shields described it as two walls, but it's essentially a wall springing out from the front of the rendered part of the building, and then continuing almost parallel with the front of the hall itself. And if you home in on that top left-hand corner of the building, it shows on that where the line of the existing gate that Mrs. Shields was talking about that's been taken out. So that was taken out from that position. And it was a timber close boarded fence that was removed with a gate set about a metre or so further back than the line of the gates that are at the moment. So it's the dotted line on that picture. But I mean, clearly this is an application that's been with us before, and it's been given very careful consideration, Chairman, by our conservation officer, who while she was unhappy with the wall springing off from the position that was shown on the first there, is essentially saying it, she was happy with it to come along this line and so continue to where these piers are here. So that's where that it's like, these are where the double gates are that Mrs. Shields was referring to, and then there'd be a pedestrian gate next to it. So it's a low stone wall with two gates. I think we would struggle to object to the proposal, Chairman, but that's the officer recommendation.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, the drive there, if you're going to put another fence or what, a gate across there, coming through the drive, how are they going to turn around to go back out again?
Look at the page. Well, there's two options. One, they either go through the gates and turn around within the curtilage, which you can see on page 119. It's a big area. Or they turn round in front of the hall. Now, the red line, it's an invisible red line on this plan somewhere. Somewhere here there's a red line. But anybody coming here would either stop at the entrance and walk up, which is some 50 metres away, or they'll come into here and turn round, or they'll reverse out. But the Highway Authority are saying to us, there's not a highway safety issue. And at that no-through road situation, I think you'd be hard-pushed to say there is.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Potter.
Thanks. Yeah, just out of interest, is the stone section, it's not really in the middle, but the stone section immediately to the left of the rendered, is that part of the original house?
It's an interesting
I'm
question.
Getting a yes from.
It's certainly listed. It has a very different. I take your point in the sense that you'd look at that and think, is that the original house and was this in itself an add-on? I'm led to believe it was all built at the same or thereabouts at the same time. Whether it was servants' quarters or what, I'm not really sure. But very often you'd get these sort of built first and then 20 years later you get something else added on. Supposedly it was all built as a one, but it is an oddity. It's not part of the symmetry of the building itself.
Well, that was my thoughts entirely, in that separate section spoils the symmetry of the building
already,
in the first place.
Already,
yeah. The rendered section makes it even worse. So I'm struggling to see in what way the wall will detract when you've already ruined that symmetry, and in fact it'll mask to a degree the rather inappropriate rendered section. So anyway, yeah, thank you.
I think we have to sort of understand, I suppose, that this building is listed for its historical and its architectural interest. The two, sometimes you lose the two. And so from a historical interest point of view, the springing of a new section of wall off what effectively is an original part of the building was something which our conservation officer wasn't particularly happy with. Architecturally, I take your point in the sense that where it's originally springing from is not part of the symmetry of the building or what we might regard as the more regular parts of the listed building. But by drawing it back and springing the new gates and low wall off the rendered section, I think our conservation officer, from an aesthetic point of view, is saying, well, if anything, it sort of reduces the harm of the rendered section slightly. So that's from an architectural point of view. From a historic point of view, obviously the rendered section has little historic value because it's 40, 50 years old.
Any further questions? No. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I mean, let's ignore the carbuncle on the end because, that's a Prince Charles phase and I've got to agree with him on that. I'm looking at the plans and forgive me, but I've got no concept of how far the wall comes out at right angles to the building. And I'm not happy that it's... I just can't get a handle on how far that wall is going to come out from that building. Whether it's back at the rendered section or not, I can't work out how far away it's going to be from the building and how much impact that will have on the building as a whole. Forgive me. Sorry, I'm just being stupid.
Distance, because you've got the photograph there, but you're struggling to get a feel for it. It's in the order of there, that where the corner is. That will give you the corner dimension. It's about 3.6 meters, 12 feet in old money, 12 feet. No, that's the new one. That's the new one. Yeah. Originally, the fence, the panel fence, came off the corner of there and came out at a diagonal like this. This one is coming out here. So, well, sorry, not here, there. I mean, I take the view personally that I think a low wall of, proper construction is probably better than the fence that was there, but I haven't got the fence to show you. It's just been taken down.
Okay, we shall move into... have you got a question, Councillor? Right, lovely. We shall move into the debate, and Councillor Cleary is the local ward member.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you to Gary for his report. I don't wish to criticise the report, however, I wonder, for the sake of saying, we can move back to the previous photograph. Thank you. Yes, I don't wish to criticise the report, but I think, looking at the frontage of this listed building, I would like to propose a site visit so that we can get a flavour of the enclosing of part of the sweep in front of this listed building. And I think a site visit
certainly my neighbour here, Councillor Goodrick, has already said before it was asked for that a site visit we think would be very handy. So I would propose a site visit. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews, next.
Well, I would second that, Chair. I mean, I've been to this building, and I find it very difficult to actually visualise exactly what is going to happen. And I think probably it'd be better if the whole committee actually went there and had a look.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick, did you want to add anything?
No, as Councillor Cleary said and Councillor Andrews said, it is very difficult actually to visualise what the impact on the main building would be, and it's a substantial building. It's a lovely building, and frankly, why they ever allowed that on the end, I have no idea. And what I don't want to do is compromise it any further. So I think a site visit might be very helpful. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Well, it has been moved and seconded for a site visit, so I will put that to the vote. Thank you. It has been approved for a site visit. Moving on to agenda item 12. Is the Speaker happy that we defer that item as well for a site visit? Yes. Yep, lovely. So can we move and...
We'll try and get the conservation officer.
Okay. We'll hopefully get the conservation officer to the site visit as well. Okay. Thank you. We'll then move on to agenda item 13, which is application at Royal Oak Hotel, 131 Eastgate, Pickering.
Thank you, Chairman. We nearly didn't bring this to committee. Will I regret that? The press aren't here. The reason for that was that we, and you'll have seen this from the agenda papers, is that during the processing of this application, we have in fact negotiated amended plans to the scheme, largely relating to the erection of the four-bedroom dwelling towards the rear of the premises, which was originally submitted as quite a large, sort of modern appearance sort of building, a lot longer, a lot taller, a lot higher. And not surprisingly, we did receive some concerns both from the Town Council and some of the residents in the immediate vicinity of the site who are listed there on the neighbour responses. At that time, we did receive one response who was from a resident who had also objected or raised an objection at that stage to the loss of the public house. So that was a comment. Well, only the one, actually. But what we then had was a further comment from that same resident not objecting to the conversion of the public house to create three small residential units. So on the one hand, but there was no retraction of the loss of the public house, so that's why we've brought it to you. And as you know, in terms of our policy with community facilities, that we are very careful when we get applications to change the use of public houses and things of that ilk, particularly in village locations. Having said that, in Pickering, clearly there are quite a number of alternative drinking establishments and premises. And my understanding is from the information provided by the case officer, this pub actually has been closed for some time, I mean, about to your more local knowledge. But clearly the report does wrestle with that issue. So as it stands at the moment, we don't have a formal retraction from that one resident who'd actually said, well, they were concerned about the loss of the public house. As you'll have seen from the committee report, the location of the main building, which is on the south side of the A170, is actually on the southeast quadrant of the roundabout. So it's south of the A170, but also east of the A169. So it's sort of some way divorced from sort of maybe the main town centre, and maybe that's what's contributed towards its demise. But That's what we have, and we haven't objected as officers to the loss of the public house, bearing in mind the number and amount of alternative premises in the town. But in terms of the actual aesthetics of the scheme, the plans are before you on pages 149 onwards. And what this scheme does propose, it is also some demolition of some of the existing buildings on the site, which I'll try and describe to you with the photographs now. So the existing elevations of the principal range of buildings is shown on page 155, and that's where you probably would deal with it. And this is the bus stop, as Councillor Raper has identified, the main pub building, adjacent range of buildings. These would be demolished, okay, in terms of the proposal. So you've got the hotel next door, and then you've got Pocklington Carpets, which is next door, and actually it's quite a substantial building that runs along the side boundary of the building. When I show you the photographs of the rear of the site, you won't believe it.
Please can I ask a small question? I'm really struggling to remember where this is. Is it anywhere near the Eastgate car park?
It's opposite side. Opposite side of the roundabout, some way divorced from the town. So in fact, given where it is in the town, the rear of the site, you'd never see it, because it's just such an odd access arrangement. But in essence, the rendering of the building is all proposed to be chiselled off. And if you turn to page 157, that is what the proposed elevation of the pub and the two cottages is proposed to look like. So aesthetically, it's a significant enhancement. Yeah, this is the access to the rear of the site from Outgang Lane. So, if we go back to page, let's get the location plan there for you. Page 150, Outgang Lane. So you've got the petrol filling station behind you here on the corner of Outgang Lane. There's this narrow access that I've probably driven past 100 times and never really noticed it. But this is the access into what was the pub car park area. And it goes behind the backs of these properties here, which are shown as the Newlands on the location plan. And it's these that screen the back of the property. So it's on the main A169 as you're going into you can't see it. And this is the area, so you've got the back of the carpet warehouse, as was, I think, bus depot, we're thinking it might have been in the past. And this is the hotel premises on the other side. So this range of buildings at the back here, these sort of lean-tos on the back of the smaller section, would all be demolished as part of the scheme. And the four-bedroom dwelling would be located in this area here, as shown on page 1. Get you there in a minute. Got the wrong location plan. 149, I was looking for it. It was before the location plan. It was slightly out of kilter. Page 149. So the back of that, it's sort of like a single aspect building. It's sort of screening a good chunk of this wall. Having said that, this building that we've now got is a lot smaller than was originally proposed. And fortunately, I think a lot of people who had previously objected to the design of the building in the rear area have now supported it, including the town council. So this is looking back across towards the Newlands building. So this is a sort of an ancillary outbuilding. And these properties originally, or most of the occupiers of these properties, did express some concern over the design of the four-bedroom building, which was actually longer, and there was some degree of overlooking, which has been addressed in the new scheme. And this is just panning round towards the back of the hotel. So again, you can see it's a rather sad sort of site, really, in the middle of the conservation area at the moment. So quite all this part of the building here, all of that is demolished. So quite an enhancement, really, I think, what we've achieved at the end of the day. But the thing that we brought to you is actually there's still this slightly unclear response about losing the public house from one of the original objectors.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, the plan on page 149, where it shows the four-bedroomed house, which I know isn't part of this application, but it... Oh, it is? Oh, right. So that is... That's the reduced size one. Yeah, well, that was what I was going to ask. Yeah, right. Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Councillor Epper.
The parking that we've got on here, would it be designated to particular residences, or will it be a free-for-all?
It's very small scale, but the plans do show which spaces are for which unit. So yes. Obviously, at the end of the day, we need to rely on the developer to do what the plans say, but yes, it is.
Okay, any further questions? No, we'll move into debate. Ward member isn't here, but Councillor Potter is local to the area. Would you like to take this on?
Yeah, I'm quite happy to do that. Well, yes, it's always sad to see the pubs go. And given the state of the horseshoe just across the road, I don't think that's going to be with us too much longer. But it's not too far distant to the next hostelry up, which still isn't the most fantastic. But now it's quite apparent that the back of this site is something of an eyesore, even though it's not particularly visible. It's a sad waste of space. The front, I mean, it's not been a successful pub, as far as I'm aware, for quite a long time. And I have to say that the plans as presented look rather attractive and quite a significant improvement on what's there, plus the fact that it's a far better use of the available space. I presume this will count in Pickering's housing delivered numbers, will it? Yeah, good. Right, I mean, I just cannot really see, other than the sad loss of a pub, albeit it's, you know, the way the pub trade's going, I don't think we could conceivably save that as a successful pub. So I just can't really see anything wrong with the whole scheme. End of story. Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to get Councillor Goodrick?
My colleague next to me and I have looked at this quite carefully, and frankly, like Councillor Potter, I think it's much better use of the space at the back. Have we lost a pub? I suspect the pub's long gone, in truth. So I question whether we have lost a pub. And we're just redeveloping the site into something more appropriate for the area. There are lots of facilities in Pickering as an alternative to this pub. I don't think we'll significantly see a harm because this one's gone. So I'm quite happy, if it hasn't been proposed, to propose the application for approval.
Councillor Cleary.
Again, I wouldn't wish to repeat, I'm not paid by the word, but I will second it if Councillor Goodrich's proposal is the first proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. If there's not been an expression of community interest, then our hands are tied. This site has to be developed and the pub's gone. Apparently, somebody said it's a shame, and that's as much as I said, and nobody else joined in on that. So we are ploughing forward. From what I've seen on the plans, we've got an excellent, visually excellent proposal before us, and power to the elbow. And after declaring interest here, pulling up to that bus stop on an evening when you've got inebriated people milling around like they're out there that they used to be, trying to get on the bus and cause mayhem, it's all to the better for public transport. Thank you.
Right, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I will put that to the vote. Thank you. Thank you, that has been approved. Agenda item 14 is any other business, and all we have is that is to set a date for the site visit. So just bear with me a moment, we'll get the calendar up. Just bear with me a moment. There is a staff briefing that morning, so is an 11 o'clock site visit possible? On the, beg your pardon, the 19th of June.
We could do nine.
Okay, thank you. There is two staff meetings that morning, so Gary could do nine. Too early. Good luck.
Well, no, sorry, I'm not back from leave.
Just bear a minute.
Following Wednesday. Wednesday the 20th.
How's Wednesday the 20th looking? Michael? Any offers?
I won't be available until the 21st.
You won't be available until the 21st?
What sort of time? You'll regret it if I bring the dogs along. 9:30?
We're going for 9:30 on the 20th of June. Is that okay, Elizabeth? Yep. Lovely. Right, bear with me. Right, 9:30. Lovely. Agenda item 15 is list of applications determined under delegated powers. Hope you have had a chance to look at those. Councillor Raper.
Yeah, I've had a look at this list. We've got one refusal and every single other one is an approval from officers, which is a remarkable thing because I look at these irregularity as to who's approved what and why. And to see where things are and keep an eye on basically on what approvals are coming in. I always look at the list when they come with the applications coming forward. It's a remarkable piece of work, and I'd like to congratulate the department for having such a high standard of approvals, if I may be so bold.
I believe you have been so bold, so very bold. Okay, thank you. I will now declare the meeting closed. Thank you all for your attendance and have a safe journey home.